I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone. After the rain, nice to see the sun again.
This is our first day in the studio together for a while.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
2 weeks ago, I was out of town, and Mom interviewed Evelyn Berkby, who was the radio homemaker of Iowa from, what, the 40s and 50s?
Yeah, she was associated with Kitchen Clatter and Homemaker program on the radio, and also has written a column and still writes a column. She's been writing a weekly column for years and years, never missed a deadline, can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh, I'd run out of things to say. She must redo topics.
I don't know. She was just very, talked. I mean, really had a good time.
And she was had recently written a book about researching her family roots, her genealogy.
Yes, yes. Witching for William. And I didn't know that you could witch for graves as well as witching for water.
Oh, that's what that was about.
That's what that was about.
Oh,
because anything that upsets the ground, whatever, is witchable.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm going to have to listen to that show on the archives. I don't know if it's posted yet, but once it gets up there, I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, and I forgot to tell Ann that that Karen's on today.
Well, she can listen Monday morning.
That's right. We're
rebroadcast Monday morning at 8 in the morning. So,
because Karen Lemansky is the sister of my favorite son-in-law, Dan Lemansky, married to my daughter Anne, Monica's sister. So we're all related.
Yep. And she gets to call him her favorite son-in-law because I'm not married. So
we joke about that, and I'm his son-in-law. Favorite mother-in-law, of course. So this book, Design Ideas for Fireplaces, was published under the name of Karen Stickles, and is now Karen Lemansky, and has spent 20 years in the hearth industry as a technical consultant for the nation's largest chimney supply wholesaler, which also manufactures chimney liners. And that, of course, is Copperfield.
Yes, Copperfield.
She has advised installers, written installation instructions, managed her company's underwriters' laboratories listings, and was part of an editing team for two hearth-related educational manuals. And so this is a beautiful book, and just the pictures alone, but the writing, if anyone is interested in decorating at all with using a fireplace, it's a must. It truly is.
Well, welcome to Writer's Voices, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Now, how long ago did this book come out?
This book was published just this fall, so it's, in a sense, new to the publishing world.
Tell us a little bit about how you went from working in the fireplace industry to writing a book about fireplaces. It seems like that must be an interesting tale.
Well, I've always wanted to be a writer, and every year, whether it's in January, the 1st of January, or whether it's sometime during the year, I make this list of things that I want to do in my life. And so writing a book has been on my list for about 15 years.
Whoa!
And I've started a couple of fiction books, but, nothing that I'd completed. Well, I decided to start an outline on this project, and I knew from taking classes at Indian Hills before that a lot of times all you really need to submit is a good outline, a couple of chapters, and an overview about what your book would be like.
Now, this is for nonfiction books.
Yes, nonfiction. Yeah.
Fiction
nonfiction
is a different story altogether.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I happened to be at the National Hardware Show, and I ran into a gentleman from, I believe it's HDA, which is the parent company of Creative Homeowner, and mentioned to him that I had started this project, and I noticed they didn't have any books on fireplaces. And so he gave me his business card and said, email me what you have, and I'll see what I can do for you. And this was right towards the closing of the show, within the last hour of the show. So
wow.
It was very lucky I happened to just stop by there. But
well,
it's
more than luck, I assume, that you,
I
you
think
know,
so.
That you had done some preparation, and you knew, and you had done, obviously done some homework about that publishing company. and what they had out there. So and I you also, were prepared.
Sure.
It was where what do you say, luck meets preparation.
Yeah, good idea. Good
way to put it. Well, I also had researched some other avenues like Amazon. You can self-print on Amazon, or you can self-print through other companies now.
Right.
Which actually, this is an ideal time for anybody who is a writer. I mean, you have not only your blog opportunities on the internet, but you can do self-publishing, you can do a website. I mean, the world is open.
Right. If what you want is to write something and connect with other with your readers through writing, there's a whole, you're right, a whole new world of possibilities. Now, if what you want is a blockbuster bestseller, you're still kind of limited to the major publishing houses.
That's true.
But this self-publishing thing is, or publishing on demand,
print on demand
is amazing. It's really.
Yeah, we've done a show about that, and the economics of it are so amazing. I've known writers who have self-published in the past, and quite successfully. I had a friend who self-published several computer manuals and some other books from the 80s and 90s, and was able to sell enough of them to make a make a good profit from it. But you had to have a large investment up front.
Oh, I'm sure.
And with the print on demand, you can get in for under $1,000.
Wow.
Which makes it much more feasible. So you looked at that, but what made you decide to go with Creative Homeowners?
Well, I happened to, as I say, ran into this gentleman. So within a couple of days of getting home, of course, I sent him everything I had with a description. And that was in May. I did not hear anything for several months. And I started working on developing it farther and farther that following November and December, thinking, well, okay, this needs to be farther along, or I need to tackle this with some other publishers. And January 3rd, I got a message on my cell phone, message on my answering machine at home, and an email all from the vice president of publishing of Creative Homeowners saying that they were very interested in doing the book.
Wow. So it took them over 6 months to decide, and then it was like they wanted to make sure they got you.
Yes. Well, one of the questions, one of the first things he said to me was, we have to be at the printer with this the 1st of May. Can you do this? And at that point, I thought, you know, opportunities like this come along very few in your lifetime. I said, well, I'll do whatever it takes.
Wow.
And anyway, the interesting thing about working on a project like this, you know, in a sense of how-to books or decorating books, is that companies like Creative Homeowner, they contract the pictures out from one of their photographers, which is what happened in this case.
I was going to ask you how you got those fabulous pictures.
I mean, this book must have several hundred photographs. Do you know how many are in it?
I couldn't tell you. It has, you know, like two, three per page.
Yeah. At least,
pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's 200 pages, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Probably 500 pictures in here. Wow.
There's quite a few.
Now, did they go out and take all those for this book, or did they use stock photography?
Well, I gave some recommendations on companies, and I also made a trip down to Heidelater, where I spoke with Kathy Rep, who's in the marketing department, and they sent me some disc of photos for this project, which I forwarded on because I wanted to make sure, you know, this Iowa company had some.
Heidelater's in Mount Pleasant.
Yes,
right?
Heidelater's in Mount Pleasant. I think they're also based out of Lakeville, Minnesota, but since they were, you know, rural or close to this area, I wanted to make sure that they had a shot at things.
That was nice. That was thoughtful.
But then there are some other things where I had submitted photos for, some photos of chimney interiors from Esteban Corporation, which is Tom and Esther Urban, just outside of Fairfield.
Oh.
You know, I submitted pictures of insides of the chimneys. Well, they didn't use some of these pictures, which that would have been very interesting because it actually shows the real damage.
Ah, yeah.
So, but more or less, they furnished the pictures, and I was to write the copy. That was a particular challenge because I had to wait for them to get the photos to me.
Right.
And even though I said I could do it on time,
oh,
then they had to go to the photographer to make sure they could
So it wasn't that you wrote what you wanted to write and then they found photos to fit. You had to write to the photos that they found.
Kind of both ways.
Kind of both, okay.
I did the outline, and then they came back and they said, well, we want to change these few things. And I said, well, okay, but I think this needs to be included. You know, so we kind of worked together on that. And I
did the
introductions.
You had one section on mantles. And,
yes.
And I'm sure you wanted to include that because that's very important.
Yes.
And so I can see how that would have to work both ways.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, kind of getting back to my basics, I was a technical consultant and then later technical manager at Copperfield for 20 years. So I was more technical oriented, and so I wanted to put in more safety, more codes, things like that. And then they would say, oh, no, we need more things on the aesthetics.
Oh.
So.
And did you have any training in design, you know, in the aesthetic part of it?
Some. I actually, in the building part of it, I spent a week at a masonry school.
Oh, my.
Yes. Which was actually kind of fun. And when you're involved with a company like Copperfield and in the hearth industry, you kind of learn about aesthetics and, you know, various tools and various materials, building materials and options. So that kind of came with the territory.
Well, the title of this book is Design Ideas for Fireplaces, and it's published under the name Karen Stickles, and we're speaking today on Writer's Voices with Karen Lemansky, who's the author of this book. It's published by Creative Homeowner and came out last fall. So, what type of, like, Creative Homeowner has a whole series of home design books?
Yes, they have plumbing, they have basements, they have a book that covers, you know, your main repair issues you may have, you know, may come across in the house. Even landscaping, they have a whole variety of books available.
Yeah. And where are these books available?
You can actually purchase this book or books like this on Amazon. Some Lowe's and Home Depot stores carry them.
Oh.
And I believe Target Online and most major bookstores.
Oh, cool. So how does it feel when you go into a bookstore or even into a Home Depot and see your book there?
Cool.
It is really strange. Especially when I open it up and it's like, wow, I wrote that.
Yeah. So you first contacted the publisher in May when you only had an outline.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got back in touch with you the following January. Needed to go to press by May to come out in November. So this all happened in a fairly, like, a year and a half time period, it sounds like.
Yeah, actually quicker than that, because they were going to get me the photos the first part of March, and it ended up being about the last week of March, first part of April. So instead of having an 8-week window, I now had a 4-week window. And then throw into that, right in the middle of that, my hard drive went. It died on me right in the middle.
And you lost stuff you'd written?
Yes. And I thankfully had copies of emails that they had and a few that I'd saved on another computer. But it was frustrating because the amount of time I was putting in on this project, I was working a full-time job, so I would get up early in the morning, work on it. I would work on it at night until about 10:30. I'd work on it all the time during the weekends, and I took some little vacation time. So actually, it was written in about the majority of it in about 3 weeks. And then it did go over a little bit into the first part of May. I was actually at a trade show in Florida and found out that I needed to do some more writing. So I essentially, you know, came up with a chapter while I was in this hotel room.
Because you saw new things there?
Not really anything too much exciting at that show.
Oh, okay.
But what made you know that you had to write a new chapter?
Well, actually, I think it had to do with the hard drive and everything, because they let me know that they were missing one of the chapters. And I said, well, I know I sent that to you.
Oh.
And apparently, somehow or another, they did not get it. I was in Florida. I knew I didn't have that on my hard drive. And so...
Oh my
so
goodness.
We have to write it.
Yeah,
so you had to rewrite it.
But it actually was probably better because I still remembered the ideas that I was going to, you know, address with each picture and refine them.
Okay,
so it worked out a little better.
It wasn't like being totally from scratch.
No.
Now, how about the layout of the book? Were you involved in that?
No, they actually handled the layout. There would be like a few things where I would say, you know, I think this needs more room, or we can't address this in, you know, this small of an area, or this picture needs to be bigger, this needs to be smaller. I made those suggestions, and they didn't always follow those. But essentially, they had complete editorial control of the book.
When they sent you the pictures, were they already laid out on the page and, you know, here's what you have to fill in, or were they just raw and then after you wrote it, they laid it out?
Well, the first interesting thing I got was, say, for instance, on chapter one, I would get the layout, no pictures. I would get, you know, how they, when you, they first do a draft on something to, you know, so you can count the words it's in. I don't know what language it's in, but it's sure not one I recognize. So anyway, I went through and counted all the words in each little block of text, you know, as they figured out what they were going to lay out. I counted all those words to figure out how many I had to have exactly for each paragraph, picture, each introduction. And then when they brought the pictures in, it was so much easier just to know, okay, here's what I got to do, you know, cut this, cut this, cut this. Or
so you had to write to very specific size limitations in every section.
Yes.
Now, did that stifle your creativity?
Or
do you think it made you a better writer?
I think it made me a better writer because what I did was I would have... I'd look at the photo, I'd jot down main ideas, and then I would just kind of go from there and just kind of cut and refine it. One of the things I took at a writing workshop, which really helped me as far as creativity, is for each chapter I would draw a circle, say mantles, for instance. And then I would come off of that circle with lines, just like horizontal, vertical lines, whatever, and I would write in... colonial, you know, type styles.
It's called clustering.
Yeah, clustering.
Yeah, I use that too.
So I did that. So it actually looked like, a bunch of little spiders all together by the time I was done. But that helped me get my thoughts together, mm-hmm. you know, on each chapter, each picture, each section. And
now
that helped.
Let's talk a little bit about this clustering method because it might be useful to listeners who are trying to write something.
Yeah.
I assume it would be mainly useful in nonfiction writing, or is it also useful in fiction writing?
Oh, I use it for my writer's group when we're talking about... I have a writer's group, and we write things about happened to us when we were kids or when we were young, raising our children or whatever. So I take the main idea and put it, you know, in a circle, and then I do the lines, and because that's how my creative process works, and I think of more things and more things and more things.
And do you have... So you started with mantles and then you went to colonial, and then would there be subcategory, would there be lines coming out of that one too, or is everything to the main topic?
Well, actually it would have been more like mantles and then styles and then colonial you know, all these different styles, and then materials might be another line.
Okay.
And, just coming off with category lines, but it's real fast. It just kind of goes right from your brain to your fingers, while you're writing, and you're not having to think of any words how to describe it in between. You're just writing, this is it, this is it, this is it, you know, this is what I want to hit, you know, in my writing. And so it just lets the creative process flow.
It's a way of outlining, but it's easier than outlining.
And fast.
I think it is.
Because
anyway,
you don't have to worry about 1A.
A, B, right, exactly.
Sub 1, sub A.
Yeah. That's right.
True.
Now, how about using, like some people I know use index cards too, that you put the different ideas on index cards, mm-hmm. and then you can, you know, scatter them out on the floor and arrange them or move them around. Have you ever tried, either of you have ever tried that method?
I haven't, but it sounds interesting.
It sounds a little too organized for me. I just take actually what I had was a bunch of pieces of paper. I just took the back of them. They were actually for work and
so you recycle.
Things to proof, and I was just, you know, writing on these. And
and so from there, you use these cluster drawings, mm-hmm. and as your outline for the content that you were writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It really helped from a point of I knew where my subcategories were going to go, but also I had it in one place so that while I was doing the introductions, I could try and hit these points too.
Oh, yeah. So you could tie the whole section together in the introduction and know where you were going with it. Mm-hmm. And the other advantage is it wasn't on your hard drive that crashed.
That's true.
Yeah. The other thing too is you can do it anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
If you have, you know, if you're waiting for a train, for instance, and you have a pad there and you have an idea, right away you can start. I mean, it's just I think it's great.
And it does you know, it gets back to another subject that we've touched on shows before, which is the idea that your creativity maybe works differently when you're using pen and paper than it does on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I just read an article about a review of a book, and I can't remember who it's by, and I apologize for this, but it was a book about writing, and this writer was really recommending writing longhand rather than on computer.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll look up where that was, and next week I'll mention in case anyone wants to hear that. But I know, Mom, you've always thought that writing longhand is where it's at.
Oh, yeah. And I'd love to get letters, you know. Somebody sat down, took a pencil, put it on a piece of paper, and wrote me, you know, and sent it.
Yep.
That means a lot to me.
Yeah.
My problem is nobody could ever read it.
Mine too. Mine too. I used to have neat handwriting, and it has deteriorated so bad.
Yeah, well, mine has too, in a way. You know, I don't know. Sometimes I have trouble reading it too. I think, now what was that I was saying there?
So, back to Design Ideas for Fireplaces, published by Creative Homeowner. In the layout of it, we were talking about, you know, you said that they actually gave you the exact size of to write about. But I noticed there's a lot of, what are these called, little boxes, things that are sort of...
Call-outs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So did you decide...
That's what they call them, call-outs?
Huh. Well, I think that's pretty much what that's what I referred to them as, working
okay.
with them.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you decide what to put in the call-outs, and... Was that your decision, or was that the publisher's decision?
That was kind of both. Mostly, they went with my recommendation, which was, you know, here are really important points I think we need to call out in each chapter. And,
okay.
you know, they would have a certain amount of room, and I would try and hit that. Sometimes I just couldn't quite do that, but I'd still send the copy anyway and say, you know, I think it's important this isn't cut. And, of course, editors, they have a good way of
cutting
anyway. So,
but you had to do a lot of self-editing,
yes.
It sounds like, to get things to fit.
And my mother, Bev Lemansky, helped a lot on proofing and editing. And also my niece, Carol Lemansky, even got in on a little bit, too. She happened to be home from college over the summer, and so... My mom said, while Kara was here, I asked her to do a little editing on this chapter.
that was a good idea.
Your mother's a teacher, longtime teacher. Did she teach English, or did she, like my mother did? Or?
Yes, primarily English.
Yeah. So, you know, you see that oftentimes in articles now. It'll say, see information in box. Mm-hmm. And it's printed sometimes in a different... a different font or something to draw your attention to it, and you see that done a lot.
In this case, it's got a the heading is backed in color, and mm-hmm. the text is backed in a pale color, whereas the rest of the text of the book is in is on a white page, and this is on like a pale, I don't know, pale
pink,
something tan or something. And so you say
it makes it stand out.
So it was the things that you felt were the most important.
Yes.
That you put in there.
Yes.
So an example, like this first chapter is design considerations, and some of the call-outs are, let's see if we start from the beginning here. We have sustaining a fire, regarding draft and flow. Okay, I see your technical side coming out here.
It just kept crepping out.
Holding the heat.
Well, this is important. I mean, people, a fireplace, of course, is aesthetic, but it's also functional, and a lot of people with today's high heat bills are, you know, thinking about this as an alternative.
Sure, and it's a renewable resource, which is very important.
Right. You bet.
Gaining heat from your fireplace, magnificent metal finishes, and certified wood-burning stoves, stove mechanics. So there's a lot of that. Now, there's a lot of sort of graphic appeal to this book, too. And I'm assuming that was part of what the publisher did, too, you know, the deciding the type styles and the various sort of graphic design elements.
Yes, that follows their layout style for their other books.
So they're consistent. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, did you learn a lot from that process?
Yes, I learned a lot. And one of the, kind of the main reference for writers and editors that they recommended was the Chicago Book of Style, as far as, you know, punctuation and the way to, you know, write things. That's what they go by.
So not E.B. Strunk.
No.
The Chicago Book of Style. And
but you had a lot of background in technical writing from your job, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you say you'd always wanted to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
From, like, when you were a child?
When I was little.
Yeah.
I wrote a book about a mouse when I was in grade school, and I won some kind of state award for it, and
really?
I still have the book.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, my writing was bad then, too. But I don't know how they could read it. But anyway, they must have liked the
drawings. The penmanship was bad, not the writing.
Yes, the penmanship was bad. But, I've always wanted to do that. And then I had a fourth grade teacher that read a lot of books to us every day. She would read, and we went through a Little House on the Prairie series, of course, and then I think the Little Peppers, which those go way back. But anyway, you know, just having this teacher that read a lot. And then my mother and my father, they read a lot. My dad doesn't even watch TV, hardly. He'll sit there and read a book all the time. And my mother's always been an avid reader, too.
Well, I grew up with a lot of books in the house.
Yeah.
Boxes and boxes of books. When we moved from Pennsylvania to Iowa, my dad brought all the books. I think that was why he had to go back for a second U-Haul load.
Probably. And we're talking U-Haul truck, big truck.
Big semi-truck, yeah.
Yeah. Of course, we had to bring a baby grand piano, too, and, you know, stuff like
that. Yeah, there was a lot of things to bring. But the funny thing was that some of those books that got brought from Pennsylvania were put in the attic in boxes and never came out of their box after we moved here. But I'm the same way. I have a really hard time letting go of books.
And I do too, as you know.
I do know. And I have tons of books that I've never read, never will read, but I still want them there on my bookshelf.
Oh, and yeah, I know it. I know it. I'm the same way. Never met a book I didn't like. I could say that. But, you know, that's the problem when I get in a bookstore.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Or books are fun, you know.
Yeah, I tend to stick with libraries a lot because then I have to take the book back. So you're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Karen Lemansky, the author of Design Ideas for Fireplaces, published by Creative Homeowner. Karen, what other writing projects are you looking at doing? Or is this, now that you've fulfilled your lifelong dream of writing a book, is that it, or are you continuing to write?
Well, I'm hoping this is just the beginning. I figure one book makes me lucky, Two books may show some talent. Third book, maybe I've got talent and I'll be a writer. Fourth book, I'm
You've
on the way.
You've got a career.
So, yes. But
so
right.
Are you thinking of nonfiction, maybe nonfiction book now?
Well, actually,
or a fiction book or what?
I've talked to a creative homeowner about three other ideas I've had for books, and I talked to the vice president of publishing, and he said, well, he said, we're already working on those books, he says, but good thinking. You're thinking like us, so keep thinking of, you know, trying to come up with something.
Okay.
So I think, though, for now, I've been working on a fiction book, and it's hard to, it really takes a lot of discipline to do writing. This, to me, was easier because, you know, I knew what I had to do, and it's kind of a little easier, I think, to write to pictures.
Right. Plus, and you had a deadline, which, you know, is hard in some ways, but it also provides some external motivation. Not only did you have a deadline, but you had a publishing contract.
Yes. So yeah, that's the big thing.
You knew that after
produce this.
Yes.
That after writing it, something would happen with it. Whereas if you're writing on spec, which sometimes happens with nonfiction, but is always the case with fiction, meaning that you can't sell it until you're done with the book, it's a little harder maybe to feel the motivation because you may finish and then it sits in a drawer and never, you know, it's never published, and it's I can see where having that contract. Now, let's go by. I have another question about getting that contract. You were an unpublished writer at that point, technical writing that you'd done for work. So they were kind of taking a chance on you. What do you think made them be willing to take that chance?
Well, actually, I have written a few articles in the past that were printed in trade journals, and then also one time that was in a Honey magazine. So I have had some experience, and I did send samples of everything I'd done to them. But
with your original proposal, you sent?
It was kind of after the original proposal I sent that out to them. But the other thing is I also provided them with a list of people in the industry that I knew could give me a recommendation as far as a credibility standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, some other people who knew what I was capable of. And I think that helped, too, to solidify everything.
Did they contact those people before they got back to you and said, yes, we want to do this book?
You know, I never did find out whether they talked to those people or not. The list may have been good enough for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So there were a couple important qualities that you had. One is that you were an expert in what you were writing about. They say, write what you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
And you started with a field that you've been working in for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably a good place to start. And, like, if you remember when we interviewed Linda Agnes about, I don't know, it's probably been over a year ago, and she was talking about getting started writing in for trade journals and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was with the Masters in Writing program at MUM, and that a lot of writers, that's a good place because they're always looking for material. You're not going to get rich or famous writing for trade journals, but it's a good way to build your credibility as a writer.
Sure.
So
sure.
Did you do that intentionally, or, you know, was that, it sort of...
This evolved, just kind of evolved?
Well, kind of evolved. In the early days at Copperfield, I did more writing than in recent years. Basically, I would get kind of bored, or else I would get this idea, and, you know, I would just have to work through it and create an article. It's just like I felt compelled to do this. And sometimes it was things I was studying, like tips for mortar, you know, what types of mortar, how to use it, what kind of problems you might have with fireplace mortars and so forth. And so I was just kind of doing that as a way of branching out of my job.
Mm-hmm.
But also it gave me a good feeling knowing that I had accomplished something like that. And so that was a very good starting point because I'd always enjoyed writing.
Well, in the back of your mind, was there the idea that if I can get these publishing credits, maybe that'll help me get a book contract someday?
Well, yeah, it actually was these trade journal articles I just did at no charge.
Right.
You know, just sent those to them. The hunting article, you know, I got paid for that, and I'm thinking, all right, now I've had my first paid item.
Your first royalty.
Now you're a professional writer.
I could say, maybe I'm a professional writer, maybe.
That's a great feeling, though, to realize that, yeah, what I wrote, somebody actually paid money to have.
Yeah, that was a great feeling.
Yeah.
But, yes, it does help. You know, as somebody, I think, wanting to get into the writing process, that would be a great thing to do, would be, you know, whatever job they're in. Like, for instance, this was chimneys, which was real exciting, let me tell you.
Although,
but to that audience, it is exciting.
Although in your time, it was becoming more and more people were getting wood-burning things, and they needed to know. They needed to know because it's not, it's just not a thing of setting wood on fire. I mean, you got to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a good time. It was a good time.
Yes. And, you know, I guess an interesting leap, too, that I made with this whole project was that in a lot of the articles that I wrote for trade journals was, in a sense, I was teaching the customers or whoever was reading, you know, how to use these products or how to interpret a situation. Whereas with this book, I'm kind of going into what I refer to as fluffy writing. It's more,
I see the difference.
Aesthetic and decorative type writing.
And that's
the purpose. Aesthetics.
That's the purpose. Although you do have some tips in there about having a, you know, wood and so forth.
Well, why don't you read us an example of your fluffy writing?
Aesthetics?
Yeah.
Well, let's see here. okay. The fireplace surround is an important architectural feature that can be a starting point for pulling together the interior design of the room. So that's the fluffy part. And, you know, you get into some of these other things that... because specific skills and technical knowledge are required for the job, make sure the installer is certified, whether your device is wood burning or gas. And then it goes on and on and on about who to contact.
Okay.
Or there are some sections that have clearances and things.
Well, you do have to be careful who you hire to do work today.
Particularly when you're dealing with
gas.
Something that could burn your house down if it was done incorrectly.
Well, I was interested in that section on mantles because my great-grandparents had a beautiful home in Newton, and it burned, but my parents managed to salvage this beautiful mantle that they had. And my mother was a keeper, saver, pack rat person, and so she put it in the garage. And so when I was in a play in high school, we got it out, and they used it on stage. They used it as part of the set because,
that's right.
I just remember that. So mantles can be taken down and used for different things, different places.
Now, did you know much about mantles before you started writing this? It seems like that wouldn't have been too much of the technical aspect of fireplaces.
Some, because the last few years I was at Copperfield, they had started to carry some different types of mantles.
So did you really have to do any research when you were writing this?
Yes.
You did?
I purchased the most recent copy of the National Fire Protection Standard 211, which is adopted by code in most localities. So I purchased that online and read through that to make sure clearances hadn't changed, because it had been about a year or so after I'd left Copperfield that I was doing the main part of this writing, and I wanted to make sure the clearances and codes and everything were correct.
Do codes change periodically?
They can. They can. A lot of these go way back to, the last time gas went way up back in the 70s, which a lot of people can remember that.
Yeah.
And it was the oil embargo, I think, was the words at the time.
Yeah.
And overnight, people were buying wood stoves and just doing all kinds of crazy venting things with them and burning houses down. So a lot of the body of the codes kind of some originated and a lot were refined from that point on. That's when Copperfield kind of got started in the business, was back in those
remember
days.
That. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And any other research that you had to do, or was everything else you already knew?
I did actually get some books on architecture and did kind of a quick study of different types of architecture. And also, although I didn't really use this, studied some various types of wood and some characteristics, and then also different
not,
types
not
of
Not all
masonry.
Wood burns alike.
True, true. Yeah. That is so true.
Yeah.
And did you do the research before you started writing the content, like before you got the pictures? And
yes.
And so you had that all prepared and
yeah.
So you seem to be pretty big on preparation.
I'll say.
Well, I've been told before I'm a little bit too detail oriented, which can be good depending on what you're doing, but otherwise it drives people crazy.
Ah. Well, you know, you're talking about studying architecture. The fireplace is a big part of the architecture of the room and of the whole house. So it's important that you use the correct, once again, mantle and placement, so forth. You know, it's important.
Yes.
Now, is there any possibility for other books about fireplaces or using your expertise in this area, or do you think you've pretty much done that?
Well, I think this is pretty much done that for this point. Mm-hmm. Although I did talk to them about a week ago, and they said that, they're keeping me in mind if anything else comes up with that is a wood-burning type project or chimney-oriented project. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure at some point in time, as all books, you know, this will probably eventually go through a revision.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, were you called upon at all to promote this book, or is it, you know, when it's in a series like this, you don't actually have to go out and do promotion yourself?
That's a real good question. Usually with these types of books, they don't do promotions. However, I have started working on a website to just kind of help promote this book and help people with some general basic questions. Eventually, it'll be woodburninganswers.com, but it's something that's still a work in progress.
Oh, cool. Are there sites out there with about fireplaces already, or is this a completely new?
There are, you know, manufacturers have sites. A lot of masons will have sites showing, you know, the awesome work that they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a general site, there really isn't anything that you know of?
I don't know that there's really anything strictly keyed to a homeowner without selling something.
Okay.
Now, the National Chimney Sweep Guild has a site for homeowners, and I think that would probably be
the closest,
the best one at this time.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you are using this expertise, going a little further with it and branching out.
Yeah, I'm trying to, because, you know, I've
you devoted 20 years of your life to get it to
might as well use it for some good.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what the couple other ideas were that the publisher was already working on something?
Well, one had to do with I'll tell you the idea I came up with was more centered around sustainable energy and renewable energy and like geothermal energy and
solar
wood burning, solar panels, wind energy. I wanted to do, you know, a book on that and designing, you know, how the houses would be designed for those to work correctly and just get into that whole aspect. And he said, well, they're already working on a similar project, so I don't know exactly what that
although I'm sure that you could find another publisher for that idea.
Probably. The thing is, it's a little tricky, is that in order to do this book, I had to sign a contract, basically. Yeah, contractual. So I can't really go write anything else on fireplaces unless I have their permission. I mean, they're fine with me doing the website, so.
Okay.
It just probably depends.
Okay.
Which I can understand. They have a huge investment in this project.
Yeah. But you could do something on solar and, you know.
That's true.
So forth. Yeah. In my radio show in Burlington this week, I just interviewed a man who's putting up the windmills the big windmills, and the station manager is buying one.
For the station?
Wow. No, for his home. And, yeah, it was very interesting.
So they're doing, like, windmills for individual homeowners?
Yes.
I didn't realize
that. Yes, they are.
I knew that they were doing these big wind farms up in Northern Iowa, and there's a lot of people here in town who are involved in that project.
Well, this area is, of course, with the Mississippi River there makes a difference, too, in the wind. But it's the sun that controls the wind. And so he's also into solar. But it was most interesting. I'll have to give you his name.
Yeah.
You can. Because he lives in Burlington. He went to Florida for several years and came back to Burlington, and he thinks that this is really going to be a going thing.
Well, when I was in Texas a couple of weeks ago, I read an article in the Houston paper, that people who were trying to put solar panels on their homes were running into problems with the homeowners associations of the communities that they lived in because of the aesthetics of it.
Mm-hmm.
That, and also because of potential incorrect installation and so forth, but largely it was the aesthetics. And, you know, it's like, okay, what's more important, saving the earth or looking perfect?
Well, I think probably what will happen is that eventually people will realize that saving the earth is uppermost, and that will be a solar panel will be a thing of beauty. It is already, as far as I'm concerned, but I think I know.
I would think somebody could create some type of awesome architectural shape with them, which would, like you say, create a thing of beauty other than just rectangular panels.
Or if the house is designed from the beginning with the solar,
that in mind,
it probably can be disguised in a way that it's not so obtrusive. And, when you're adding it to an existing home, it's probably more obtrusive. But still, it's like, I would still want to do it.
Yeah, I was asking about this, if there's any noise factor in these windmills, and he said, no, there's not. It's just maybe a whoosh, whoosh.
Now, I have heard, though, that there's some issues with birds, that birds get killed by them.
And I would imagine they could, yeah.
Yeah, and that's...
If the wind gets too violent, they somehow turn in... disengage.
Oh.
Because I asked him about that, too. I mean, it's most interesting. Most interesting to look into that.
Okay, well, we're getting a little off the subject of writing, but it is an interesting topic.
Well, it might be a possibility for Karen to write about.
So you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today, Karen Lemansky, author of Design Ideas for Fireplaces, which is available at on Amazon and at Home Depot and Lowe's, and it looks like at creativehomeowner.com as well. So, Karen, you say you're working on a fiction book. So after having this experience of writing under deadline for a nonfiction book and now switching to fiction, I imagine the style of writing is quite different. How are you making that transition, and have you taken courses and so forth that help you in structuring a work of fiction? Or just sort of winging it?
Well, that kind of goes back again to Indian Hills. I took some creative writing classes there several years ago. And the classes, I took one on basically drama or writing scripts, which was very good because that really helps to develop dialogue.
Oh.
And the other class I took was more on short stories. Which is, it was great for background and everything. But, with those books, I kind of learned some about, script is different, and the way you work up the scenes. Yeah, it's a completely different ball game.
You have to keep the characters in character the whole way through.
Yes, in character the whole way through. I mean, it's good to write a character profile on each character.
Do you do that with your cluster methodology, too? Or could you?
You could. Yeah, you sure could. That'd be a very quick, easy way to just put it pretty much right from your creative thought right to your paper is to do that. And
one nice thing about clustering, you can always add as things, further on down the road, as things come about, the character there might be a character trait that you didn't know about at first.
True. And also it kind of, I think, acts as a compass to kind of keep you on track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go away from it for, you know, step away from your writing for a little while and you go back to it, it's like, you know, you want to be able to look at it and just step right back into character.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting, though. I mean, you know, perhaps it will go somewhere. Perhaps it will be one of those books that end up getting maybe I print and put in the closet. And, you know, the thing is, I think anytime you do any kind of writing, it's never a waste because, you know, 20 years from now, I mean, maybe my grandkids look at it and they're like, wow, look what my grandma wrote.
Absolutely. You know, I agree.
Or, you know, how many famous authors, let's see, Charles Dickens became famous after he died, right, I think? I mean, really,
well, there are lots that, there
rich
are lots of
or
them
something,
that did, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of them, they'll do the writing and the fame comes afterwards like an artist.
Right.
So,
but you're not necessarily writing for fame. You're writing because you love to write.
I love to write. And also I'm goal-oriented, and I'm not going to be happy till I maybe hit that fourth or fifth one. Now, I may be 95 by then. But
Because you're continuing to work full-time as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you, after you left Copperfield, where are you working now?
I worked at Harper for a couple of years.
Okay.
So,
and was that a similar industry, or is it
Completely different?
Completely different.
Yeah, completely different.
And is there anything there you could write a book about?
Not really, about brushes and brooms. It just
kind of a narrow topic.
Yeah, very narrow topic.
Yeah.
But I would encourage anybody who's ever thought about writing just to sit down and start doing it. You know, do the cluster. Just write down ideas as fast as they come, because I think one of the problems people think with writing is that they have to sit down and write each perfect sentence the first time. And you don't want to even think about being perfect until, you know, towards the end, you know, maybe the third or the fourth draft. I mean, you refine it. You want your creative ideas and the main points down first.
That's the editing process. Yes.
And as you go through more and more times, that's time to, you know, edit it. And also having somebody who doesn't know anything about the topic or about your story read through it. It gives you a surprising angle on things that maybe you think you've covered because you're so close to it,
mm-hmm.
but maybe these things or this character or something is a little confusing, to them.
You might say, you lost me on this one. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Or
did your mother play that role for you?
She did
book?
Some. Yeah. And that was helpful.
I bet
too.
Have you ever been part of a writer's group?
No, I had thought about that. I would be interested in doing something like that.
Monica has a writer's group, don't you?
Yeah, we meet kind of sporadically, but I'll get in touch with you and see if you'd like
it's
to
It's fun because you get ideas from other people, too.
Oh.
You know, it's like a snowball thing, you know. Oh, yeah, that something like that happened to me once, and there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, it, you know, people are people, and things happen the same to all of us.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Karen.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah.
It really has.
For anyone who just tuned in, you were listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today was Karen Lemansky, author of Design Ideas for Fireplaces, and which was the first of at least 5 books.
At least. Right. And it's available at and on Amazon and also at Lowe's and Home Depot. So look for it. It's fireplace, a beautiful fireplace in white, big white letters against a, what color is that?
Maroon
background. So it stands out. And beautiful pictures. If you're thinking of, you know, putting a fireplace somewhere in your house, you surely should get this book first.
Yeah, definitely. And do you have any last words for aspiring writers?
You know, if you're still in school, middle school, high school, and you think you want to become a writer, really pay attention to those English classes. Because, you know, that's all very important, you know, sentence structure and punctuation and everything. I mean, that's so very important. And also, for somebody who aspires to be a writer, read read a lot about, and the styles that are used to cover the subjects that you're interested in. You know, for instance, whether it's nonfiction and you want to do a how-to book, kind of look through that, read through that, see how that's done. If it were, you know, in another sense, a historical romance, get a bunch of those and read them, because there's kind of a formula in a lot of those books.
Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, before we close, I want to go back to when you talked about how you got this book published, which was you were at a trade show for your on your job and approached this this publishing company. Were you nervous about doing that, like just going up and talking to them?
No, I really wasn't, because, you know, I've traveled a lot, and you know, in my job at Copperfield, I'd been on the phone with a lot of different people. And you know what? Sometimes you too, also, even if you were afraid, you got to get to the point where it sure doesn't hurt to ask.
That's true, because the worst is they say no, and you're no better off or no worse off than you were before you asked.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
Actually the worst is maybe have kind of looked, you know, maybe was a little nervous and walked off without asking. I mean, you never know until you ask. Sometimes, you know, the best breaks you have in life are ones like that that you wouldn't expect.
Right. Well, we're out of time. And stay tuned for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore if you're listening on Friday. And if you're listening on Monday, stay tuned for The Cult Show. Both of those are very interesting shows that I'm sure our listeners enjoy. And, Mom, do you have some words of advice for
us? I have
us?
A quote from a very famous woman author, Louisa May Alcott. And she once wrote, "I am not afraid of storms, for I have learned how to sail my ship."
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.